Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of mystery from RelicRadio.com. Our first story comes from 21st Precinct this week. We'll hear the 600 from April 25th, 1956. After that, it's Pursuit of Death from Michael Shane. That story aired September 18th, 1948.
21st Precinct. It's just lines on the map of the city of New York. Most of the 173,000 people wedged into the 9/10 of a square mile between Fifth Avenue and the East River wouldn't know if you asked them that they lived or worked in the 21st. Whether they know it or not, the security of their homes, their persons, and their property is the job of the men of the 21st Precinct.
The 21st. 160 patrolmen, 11 sergeants, and 4 lieutenants, of whom I'm the boss. My name is Cronin, Vincent P. Cronin. I'm captain in command of the 21st Precinct. I was doing day duty, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tours of duty vary like the weather. Some are quiet, others are stormy. This tour was a stormy one. When I came on the job at 7:30 a.m., a 3-alarm fire in an old brewery near the East River had just been brought under control. 2 city firemen had been overcome and taken to Metropolitan Hospital. At 8:16 a.m., a bus and a taxi cab collided on 2nd Avenue. The driver of the cab and his 2 passengers were injured. Shortly after 9 o'clock, there was a call that a paint store on Lexington Avenue had been burglarized during the night. I was still at the scene of the accident when Patrolman Farrell, my operator, rang into TS from a call box and informed me of the burglary. We made the run to Lexington Avenue. The men from Sector 4 and Sergeant Kearney were already on the job. Farrell parked between their cars in front of the paint store. All right, let's go.
Hello, Captain.
What do we got, Ross?
A safe job.
Yeah?
They hauled it away. They just rolled it out the front door, carried it away.
All right.
Don't touch the door, Captain. That's the way they got in and out.
Okay.
Sergeant Jenny says the detectives might want to try for fingerprints.
All right, stay on the job here. Keep the sidewalk clear.
Yes, sir.
Time to usually open the door, Mr. Restolis. The same time, 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock every day.
Hello, Sergeant.
Captain. Mr. Restolis, this is Captain Cronin.
How do you do?
Some mess to come to work to. Some mess, huh?
Mr. Restolis is the proprietor, Captain. Mr. Peter Restolis. He opened up this morning and found the place had been burglarized during the night.
The whole safe picked up. The whole safe. You'd think the safe would be safe. The whole thing.
You know the private detective, Sergeant?
Yes, sir. I rang in as soon as I saw what it was. And Sally was catching. He notified the safe and lost squad, and he's on his way over here himself.
Oh, where was this safe, Mr. Stone?
Right back there, Ken. Right back there, in plain view, with a light on it. I always make it a practice to leave a light on it. Right here, in between brushes and wallpaper.
Oh, what kind of a safe was it, Mr. Stone?
A black one.
I mean, do you know the name of the manufacturer and the style number?
Oh, well, to tell you the truth, no.
Well, when did you buy it?
Well, let's see. I had it when I removed to this location. I had it about a year then. I've been here 9 years, so I got the safe about 10.
It's important the detectives have a description of the safe. Don't you have the manufacturer's name, the model number written down somewhere?
Well, yes. Tell you the truth, I think I do. I think I got the original invoice from when I bought it.
Well, good. That's all we need. Where is he in?
In the safe.
That's it. How was the entry made, Sergeant?
The door was Jimmy's. Neat job, Captain. They got a bar in between the door and the frame and just snapped off the latch.
Yeah.
And when I walked up to the door, I could see something was screwy. I touched it and it opened.
The lock is broken off.
Listen, I got my insurance policies in the safe, too. How does that make me stand on the insurance?
Well, you don't need your policies. Just get in touch with your broker. Do you have any cash in the safe?
Oh, yeah, sure. That's why I keep the safe, Principal.
How much?
Oh, $600-$700.
Your receipts from yesterday?
Well, most of it. $450 is the receipts yesterday. The rest is extra cash. I just keep rot.
Huh? Why?
Well, tell you the truth, Captain, it's a couple of $100 I had. I didn't want my wife to know about. You know, mad money. She knows everything I'm doing and how much I got in the bank to the last nickel. You see, I'm the president and she's the secretary treasurer of this little corporation we got, Restolis Painted Corporation. And she takes her job serious. I figure I'm entitled to a couple of $100 she don't know.
What is it, $600 or $700?
Well, between, I don't know. I'd have to figure the register and so forth.
What else did you have in there, Mr. Restolis?
Oh, a couple of dollars in stamps. Oh, for crying out loud, my war bond. My war bond was in there.
No, you won't lose anything there. You have a record of the serial numbers, don't you?
Yeah, also in the safe.
You sure had a lot of faith in that safe, Mr. Stoller.
Well, who'd have thought, you know?
Listen, the government will make good on those war bonds, won't they? That's my hard-earned money in those bonds. What happened?
You better get in touch with the Treasury Department as soon as you can, Mr. Stone.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Anything else in there, Mr. Rosoli?
Oh, my accounts receivable. Listen, how much chance is there of getting them back? I mean, the bonds and the accounts receivable. I don't care about the cash. You know, this could develop into an expensive proposition. The Treasury might give me a hard time, and without the accounts receivable, well, to tell you the truth, I'm a dead duck. Accounts payable, who cares? The people I owe, if I don't pay them, will let me know, but the people that owe me aren't going to come around here and volunteer money. No, sir. You think I can get it back, the contents, besides the cash, I mean?
You probably will, Mr. Stolas. All I want's the cash. Ledgers and war bonds won't do them any good.
Oh, that's good news, if only it comes true.
Well, what'd they do, Sergeant? Roll it along here?
Yes, sir. You can see the track. Right down here and out the door. Must have had a pickup truck or a car waiting.
A car? Oh, they couldn't get that safe into a car. You know how big it is? Well, it comes up to here. I'm up to here. There must have been 9 guys to move it. Look, I haven't had it out of that corner for 2 years. It was so heavy. Look at the dust right there.
You were all alone in the store, Mr. Stone?
No, that's right, all alone, except on Saturdays. My wife comes down to give me a hand and work on a book. She's got a job down in Wall Street. On Saturdays, she comes to help me out.
You've always been alone in the store?
Well, yeah, for the last 3 or 4 years. I used to have help, but it got more than the traffic could bear. I couldn't keep them, and I always had their problems, plus my own. I figured it didn't pay. 12 guys there must have been to roll that safe out of here. Believe me, it was this big. It was this big and heavy. Now, who could that be on the phone? It's a fine time.
You better ask her, Mr. Stoller.
It's a fine time for business as usual.
Some deal, huh, Captain?
Yeah, some deal. Had to roll the safe out, cross the sidewalk, up onto a truck. Where was the patrolman on post?
Beat me, Captain.
What time do you think they broke in, Sergeant?
Who?
He closes the door at 6 o'clock. He didn't open up until 9 this morning. Could have been any time in between.
Yeah, yeah.
Sergeant, give me the names of the 2 men who were on post here for the night tour and for the late tour.
Yes, sir.
I want to know why they didn't see this burglary in progress, or at least discover that the door was Jimmy.
Hey, listen, Captain, that telephone's for you.
For me?
Yeah, I answered it, and somebody says, who's the cop in charge there? It was a dame, some dame. I said, there's a captain here. She said, let me talk to the captain.
All right, where's the...
It's back there on the counter, right next to the cage. Right.
You don't need all those men here, Sergeant. Get some of them back out of your
own. Yes, sir.
Captain Cronin.
Are you in charge of the cops there?
Who is it?
That's not important now, Captain.
Oh, it's important if you want to talk to me.
Now, well, look, if you really want to know who it is, I'm the guy who's got the safe from there.
Oh, that's so.
Yeah, that's so. I want to make you a little proposition.
Well, I don't know whether I want to talk about a proposition with you.
Well, whatever we talk about, let's make it fast. I don't want to give you a chance to find out what I'm calling from.
All right. I'll make it fast. What do you want?
I want the combination.
You don't want much, do you?
Look, we've been trying to get into that thing all night. We've been trying to rip it. We've been using a torch on it. All we want is the dough, that's all.
Well, that's very nice of you.
The deal is you give us the combination. I know he's got a lot of other stuff in there he wants besides the money, but that's all I want, the money.
What's your proposition?
Give us the combination. We'll leave the stuff where it can be picked up without getting hurt. We'll leave the whole thing.
And if you don't get it?
If we don't get it, the safe winds up the bottom of the river. And Rostolis never sees anything else he's got in there. And that's fair, isn't it? How fair can you get?
All right, hold the phone a minute. Now, talk it over with Mr. Rostolis.
No, I don't hold any phone. I'll call you back. Captain who?
Captain Cronin, 21st Precinct.
All right, I'll call you back there.
Hello? Hello?
What's the trouble, Captain?
Well, that was a burglar.
A burglar?
Did you say it was a burglar on the phone?
Oh, that's who he said it was.
What does he want?
A combination to the safe.
The what? Who does he think he is?
He can't get it open. He said if he gets the combination, you'll recover everything else in the safe except the money. All he wants is the money. If he doesn't get it, he says, the whole thing goes to the bottom of the river.
You mean I could get my accounts receivable and my war bond back?
That's what he said.
Well, who cares about the money? I'm covered by insurance for that. I'll go along with him. I'm inclined to do that.
Well, I don't know whether I will, Mr. Rostolis.
Now, look, whose stuff is it? I've got a lot to lose.
We'll talk it over with the detectives. They'll be here soon. See what they want to do about it.
Well, I know what I want to do about it.
I've been a long time in this job, Captain. I never heard of anything like this before.
Oh, you learn something new every day, Sergeant. Every day in the year. Within a few minutes, detectives of both the 21st Squad and the Safe Loft and Truck Squad, the Central Office Specialists who handle safe burglaries on a citywide basis, arrived at the scene. Sergeant Tierney gave them such information as he had collected, and I told them of the phone call from the man who purported to be one of the burglars. The detectives took over the investigation, and Sergeant Tierney instructed his men to resume patrol. I returned to the station house where I signed the blotter, went into my office to read and sign reports and communications which had accumulated since I was last on duty. At 20 minutes after 10, I had almost finished the paperwork when I looked up and saw Lieutenant Matt King, commander of the 21st Detective Squad, and another man standing in the doorway.
Yes, Mud.
You got a minute, Captain?
Yeah, sure. Come in.
How are you, Captain Barnard? This is Detective Gordon Sawyer of the Safe and Law Squad.
I know you, Sawyer.
Yes, sir.
Sit down. Max, sit up.
Yeah. Well, that was an odd one this morning, wasn't it?
Sure was. How do you figure, Sawyer? You fellas ever hear of anything like that before?
No, sir. It's new to us. Guy must be a psycho trying to swing a deal like that.
Well, he didn't sound much like a psycho on the phone, Matt. How are you fellas going to figure, Sawyer?
Well, a couple of things, Captain. One, Mr. Restola said it was a woman on the phone when he answered, and you picked it up, and it was a man.
That's right.
Two, from the description Restola gave us of the box, it sounded like a certified 600. Now, a safe man who really knows his business wouldn't find much trouble getting into a box like that. He'd try ripping it, and if that didn't work, he'd use a cutting torch, get inside of it that way, especially since they carried it off and can work on it at their leisure. They aren't red-hot iron men, that's for sure. Whoever they are, I don't think they've been long in the trade.
How many of them you think there were?
Well, that box weighs 600 pounds. There must have been at least three of them, maybe four.
Well, what about the girl on the phone?
I don't know, Captain.
I think I've got an idea about that.
Yes, sir?
If this burglar's going to put the proposition to someone, who'd be the logical person? Not the policeman on the job. A logical one would have been Stoller. I don't think he wanted to talk to Stoller. That's why he had the girl put in the call.
You mean you think Ristolas might have recognized his voice?
Might have.
Yes, sir, that's a good possibility. But why the girl? There must have been at least two other men in the deal. Why the girl?
I don't know. Maybe his friends didn't think it was a good idea. Maybe they gave up on the deal when they couldn't get the box open. No, any number of reasons.
Sawyer, let's check out some of the people Ristolas knows.
Okay, Lieutenant. He said he used to have help in the store, but not anymore. How about his former employees?
Yes, sir, there might be something there. You going to be around here all day, Captain?
Well, I was going out on patrol again this afternoon. About all. Why?
Well, we figured this bum might call back here to see if the deal will go through.
And if he does, we've got the switchboard here. One of us will be right out there. We'll keep one line open to the telephone company to get the location of the phone he's calling from. As soon as we can get the location, we'll have a car go right over there.
He won't stay on the phone long. He wouldn't this morning. He knows we're looking for his call.
Well, he's got to stay on long enough for you to give him the combination.
And you want to go along with him?
Well, part way. We'll give him a phony combination. That might give us a chance to get to him.
If you take long enough to tell it to him, Captain.
I'll take long enough.
So we'll be out at the board and start to work on every call that comes through to you, Captain, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's all right.
If you'll just take a few seconds longer to get to the phone than you normally do, we might have a chance.
If he calls again.
Well, he's got the safe and we've got the combination. If he had the nerve to carry that safe out across the sidewalk, he certainly got nerve enough to make another telephone call.
You are listening to 21st Precinct, a factual account of the way police work in the world's largest city. This year, there's something brand new in campaign news coverage, an innovation by CBS News, which is always on the lookout for new ways to illuminate and enlarge its news reporting. It's the CBS News Campaign Cavalcade, a 12-man unit of top CBS newsmen which will be touring America in two specially designed and equipped station wagons, heading always for on-the-spot coverage wherever political news is breaking. Perhaps the cavalcade has already visited your locality. Perhaps it's on its way right now to cover the political situation there, not only from the candidate's point of view, but yours. Be on the lookout for it, for the CBS News campaign cavalcade is on its way. And now back to Captain Conan and the 21st Precinct.
I remained at the station house for the balance of the morning. Detective Sawyer of the Safe and Law Squad posted himself next to the telephone switchboard, ready to use another line to trace any subsequent call from the safe burglar. He got head starts on two callers who had asked for me, but both of them turned out to be ordinary police business. At 11 o'clock, Patrolman White, who had worked the 12 to 8 tour on the post where the safe burglary occurred, came into the precinct house and stopped to talk to the desk officer. About the same time, I finished my paperwork and started out of the office into the muster room. I saw Patrolman White and asked him to come into my office. What are you doing back in the house, White? Weren't you off at 8 o'clock this morning?
Yes, sir, but I had to go to court on an old case, and I left something here I wanted to pick up.
Come on in, son.
Yes, sir.
You were assigned to post number 6 at midnight, 8 a.m., is that right?
Yes, sir, that's right.
You're familiar with the paint store on Lexington Avenue run by Mr. Peter Ristola?
Yeah, that's on post number 6, Captain.
You have occasion to notice anything unusual at the paint store during your tour, do you?
No, sir.
Did you try the front door at all during your tour?
Well, I did on my first time around.
You saw nothing unusual during the balance of your trip?
No, sir.
Did you notice any truck parked on your post near the store?
No, sir.
White, sometime during the night, burglars jimmied the front door, got in the store, rolled out a 600-pound safe.
They did?
I'm telling you they did. Rolled it out the front door, crossed the sidewalk into a truck. Where were you?
Well, I didn't see them.
I know you didn't see them. I'm trying to find out why.
Yes, sir.
After your first time around, didn't you try the door again during the course of the tour?
No, sir.
Well, why not? Can you explain why you didn't?
Yes, sir.
Well, go ahead, explain. That's what I'm waiting for.
Well, a little after 1 o'clock, there was some trouble over in a bar on 3rd Avenue.
What kind of trouble?
Well, two of the patrons got in a fight, Captain. One of them hit the other over the head with a beer bottle. The man was unconscious, and I had to go to the hospital with him.
What time did you get back on post?
At 2:23, Captain.
Did you start around again?
Yes, sir.
Did you try any front doors?
Well, I started to, but it was along about that time that the alarm hit for this fire in the old brewery on the river.
Yeah.
Well, Sergeant Collins drove by and instructed me to leave my post and go over to York Avenue.
Well, what did you do there?
Well, the firemen had lines strung across York Avenue. There were about 30 pieces of apparatus there. I was instructed to reroute traffic off York Avenue and onto 1st and 2nd.
How long did you stay there?
Until I was relieved.
What time was that?
20 minutes after 8 o'clock this morning. I came into the station house, changed into my civilian clothes, and I went down to court. That's where I was until I got back here.
Okay, Wayne. Go on home.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Captain. Bye, Captain.
All right, leave the door open. 21st Precinct, Captain Cronin.
This is Soria, Captain. There's a call coming through for you. I think it's our boy.
All right.
If you'll hang up and let it ring 3 or 4 times.
Okay. Thank Captain Cronin.
Now, you know who this is, Captain?
I think so.
Well, what about the deal? You ready to go through with it?
I think so.
Well, what's the combination?
Now, wait a minute. Look, first, I want your assurance that you're not going to throw that safe in the river. The man wants his property back.
You get it back.
Well, I just want to make sure that
you're
not...
What you're trying to do, you're trying to stall for time. I'm not going to stay on this line long enough for you to trace the call. Believe me, I'm not. Now, what's the combination?
All right, just a second, Al. Let me find it, huh?
Don't take more than a second, I'm telling you. Don't take more than a second.
All right, I'm getting it. Just a second.
I'm telling you.
All right, hold it. Yeah, here it is.
What?
Let's see. Two full turns to the right.
Two full turns to the right, like that dollar.
And stop at 71.
Stop at 71.
Mm-hmm. Now, back left past 71, stop at 6.
Back left past 71, stop at 6.
Six.
Yeah, then what?
Now, look, you're going to keep your promise, aren't you?
I'll keep my promise if you'll keep yours. What's the rest of the combination? I haven't got all day here. I know what you're trying to do.
All right. And right to 98.
Is that it?
Yep, that's it.
Okay, goodbye.
I think we got a chance, Captain.
Well, I couldn't keep him on the phone any longer, Sawyer. He knew what we were up to.
We made it.
Good. The girl was with him again. Apparently, she was standing right alongside him, taking down a combination as he repeated it.
It was from a pay station.
I figured.
A drugstore on Astoria Boulevard. A car from 114th is on the way.
Good. Maybe they'll make it.
I'll call the squad out there and ask him to take a look, too.
Okay.
I'll do it from the board. Oh, excuse me, Lieutenant.
It's all right. Go ahead.
We got the call, Lieutenant.
You talked to him, Captain?
Yeah, Matt. I gave him a combination. They traced it to a pay station and a drugstore on Astoria Boulevard.
Well, he's probably gone by now.
Yeah, well, the car's on the way. Sawyer's calling the 114th squad and having them take a look, too.
Astoria, huh? Yes, sir. You know something, Captain? I had Vitaly and Novak over there talking to that Mr. Rostolis for the better part of the morning.
Yeah.
We've been going on the possibility that maybe your suggestion is correct. The man didn't want to talk to Rostolis on the phone because he might recognize the voice. They asked him all about his former employees, friends, and relatives, anybody that he knew who was familiar with the store or worked there.
Did they get anywhere?
No, no place much, but one thing came out.
What's that?
Rostolis' wife has a brother who's been in a little trouble.
Oh, that's so.
Yeah, he did one bit for grand larceny. He's been out for 2.5 to 3 years. He hasn't got jammed up since. The Stoller said his brother-in-law used to clerk in the store on Saturdays once in a while. No, just to help him out a little bit in the rush. He said he wasn't much account as a clerk, though. He didn't know varnish from enamel.
that he hasn't seen his brother-in-law in about 7 or 8 months. Doesn't think his wife has either.
Well, it's nothing in itself.
Rostolis would know his brother-in-law's voice over the telephone.
Yeah?
His brother-in-law might think that Rostolis is a pretty good mark.
Well, it's a possibility, Matt, but I still don't have much.
Hmm. Do you know where he lives, the brother-in-law?
Astoria?
Yeah, Astoria.
Well, I guess you want to talk to him.
Yes, sir. I guess we do.
In another minute or so, Detective Sawyer came into my office and told me that he had spoken to the acting lieutenant in command of the 114th Squad. Two detectives from there were en route to the drugstore on Astoria Boulevard to see if they could locate the caller. It was determined that Detective Sawyer, accompanied by Detective Vitale of the 21st Squad, would go to Astoria and talk to the brother-in-law of the victim. The fact that the brother-in-law lived in Astoria and had a criminal record was considered more than a coincidence. After they left my office, I turned my attention to other business of the precinct. At 1 p.m., I went out on patrol and returned in time to turn out the platoon for the night tour at 4. The precinct was calmer than when I came on the job in the morning. The storm had abated. After the men marched out the door, a call came from upstairs that Lieutenant King would like to see me in the detective squad office. I walked through the back door where several of the men who had just come off duty were standing around talking. I climbed the rickety stairs to the second floor and walked into the 21st squad. Detective Sawyer was sitting on the edge of the desk talking to a small blonde woman. I walked over to him.
Well, I was just doing him a favor. That's all I was doing.
Sawyer?
Oh, hello, Captain. How are you?
After all he asked me to do was make a telephone call for him. If a girl can't make a telephone call for a man, well, what's this world coming to?
Captain, this is Eleanor Mohall.
How do you do?
I'm sure. I didn't have anything to do with breaking into that store. I wasn't anywhere near the place. I didn't know what it was all about. He asked me to do him a favor, that's all, and I did. I didn't know what it was all about.
He asked you to write the combination down, too, when he got it from the captain here. You knew what that was all about, didn't you?
Well, not exactly. He's not the kind that tells you everything.
You got it about wrapped up, sir?
Yes, pretty much. Vitale and I went to this house in Astoria. We found the brother-in-law out there and her.
I told you, I was just visiting. That's all I was doing. I was just visiting.
We took a look in the garage, and what do you think was there?
The safe.
Yes, sir, the safe.
I didn't know it was in there. I don't look in garages. Why should I look in a garage? I was just visiting him, and he asked me to do him a favor. You can't tell somebody for doing a favor.
Well, where's the lieutenant in his office?
Yes, sir.
I didn't know what it was all about. That's the honest to goodness truth. He asked me to do him a favor. That's
all. Yeah,
Captain Conan.
Come in.
I wasn't here.
I thought you'd like to meet this man, Captain. You talked to him over the phone, Lee Tangley.
What are we waiting for? You got the safe, you got me. Book me and get it over with, will you?
I'm tired. Says you were up all last night?
Because I was up all last night, yeah.
It was a very smart thing you did, breaking into your brother-in-law's store, wasn't it?
Oh, that was smart enough. The stupid thing was leaving a safe in my garage. I should have found someplace else.
You find out I was with him on the deal last night, man?
Yes, sir. He told us.
Still, I told you. I told you everything. Why should I keep anything back? They walked out of me. You think I want to be in and them out? Not me, brother. I weak and easy. When I go down for the third time, I take everybody with me.
Why did you pick on your own brother-in-law?
I wanted to keep the money in the family.
That was very thoughtful, wasn't it, Captain?
Very.
We're sending a truck out after the safe, Captain. I'm kind of anxious to see it. Sawyer told me they clawed at it and hacked at it and burned it with a torch. Tried to knock the knob off. They couldn't make a dent in it.
It must be a pre-war safe. If they build them like that today, I'll say they don't. Who's got a chance of one of those things? And it's work. You know that's work to get it out of the store, onto the truck, and out to the garage? Then to have to go to work on it? You know we worked on that thing from 2:30 this morning till almost 8. We couldn't make a dent in it?
Is that when you got the bright idea to call me?
Yeah, that's right. I came over to New York. Walked down the other side of Lexington Avenue to see what kind of a rumble there was from the deal. When I saw all the cops parked out in front, I went in a candy store and called.
Well, who was with it? Just Eleanor?
Yeah, that's right, just Eleanor. I had the idea out in the garage, but the other boys thought I was crazy. They wouldn't have any part of it. I said to them, look, I'm not 2 feet away from where all that money is. Not 2 feet, and I can't get my hands on it. If you don't want any part in it, get out. I said to myself, I'll do it myself. And they got out. All that work, not a dime out of it. That's what gets me backbreaking work. Are you going to bring them in here, those boys? I'd like to see the looks in their faces. They take a fall, don't get a dime out of it. I'm laughing. It's a big joke.
All right. Come in, Mr. Stoller.
Yeah.
I'm Lieutenant King.
How are you? I'm pleased to know you.
Lee, I don't know what to say.
Say hello.
I'm ashamed of you, Lee. I'm really ashamed of you. My wife's own brother to do such a thing to me.
What do you want from me, Pete? I did it. What am I going to do, say I'm sorry?
You would really throw the safe in the river?
Your own brother-in-law's accounts receivable and bonds at the bottom of the river? I can understand how you would do it to me, but your own flesh and blood is my wife.
Don't knock yourself out, Pete, will you?
Why did you do it, Lee? Why didn't you come to me if you needed money?
I needed money, but who needed a song and dance along with it?
Captain, do you understand it? I don't. A grown man, look at him. In his trade, he can go out and make $25 a day. $25 a day, and he's got to go get himself in trouble like this again. What's the answer? $25 a day.
The answer, Mr. Restola, seems to be that he prefers night work.
Twenty-first person, Sergeant Kenny. Who's dead? Who? How? Where is this? Where? 8080 flat? Yeah.
Yeah, who is this?
And so it goes. Around the clock, through the week, every day, every year. A police precinct in the city of New York is a flesh and blood merry-go-round. Anyone can catch the brass ring. Or the brass ring can catch anyone.
21st Precinct, transcribed, a factual account of the way police work in the world's largest city, is presented with the official cooperation of the Patrolman's Benevolent Association, an organization of more than 20,000 members of the Police Department, City of New York. James Gregory in the role of Captain Cronin, Ken Lynch as Lieutenant King. Featured in tonight's cast were Joe DeSantis, John Sylvester, Miss Leslie Woods, Bill Quinn, Larry Haynes, and Eric Dressler. 21st Precinct is written, produced, and directed by Stanley Niss. Roger Foster speaking.
Driving pretty fast when the big black sedan came roaring at me. I tried to hold the car from crashing into the guardrail, but suddenly the wheel twisted out of my hands like a headstrong woman, and the car got a mind of its own. The New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. Michael Shane, reckless, red-headed Irishman, back again in his old haunts in New Orleans. This is your director, Bill Russo, inviting you to listen to another transcribed episode, which we call The Pursuit of Death.
Charlie.
Oh, hi, Mr. Shane.
Got the 5-star?
Hot off the press.
Yeah.
Ah, thanks. What?
Hey, take a look at Dream Girl, Charlie. You know, when you grow up...
Yeah. But she looks like she's asleep on her feet. Hey, paper lady!
What?
I said paper lady.
Don't do that. Don't talk behind my back. In back of
me. Okay, okay, lady. Boy, she must have had a bad dream.
No, Charlie, it isn't sleep in her eyes. It's fear.
Hey! Look out,
lady! Hey, what are you trying to do? Get yourself killed? Or haven't you heard it's bad to walk in front of traffic?
Nobody pushed me. I'm behind in this city.
Nobody pushed you, lady.
I told you I was pushed. I was just walking. I didn't want to cross the street. Somebody pushed me.
Okay, okay. Somebody pushed you. You feel better now?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Well, good. And I'm...
No, no, don't let go. Oh, now I'm...
Oh. Yeah, is that tight enough?
I suppose that sounds good. Now, for the first time in weeks, I can't. Who are you?
Mike Shane, private detective. One of my hobbies, keeping beautiful women from crawling under cars.
You're solid. Dependable. I need something solid. Did you say private detective?
Yeah, from year to year. They issue the license down at City Hall.
I need you.
Sure, lady. Now, why don't you take it easy, huh? You'll break up if you keep on like this.
I want you to do something for me.
Yeah? Like what?
I want to hire you to protect me.
From what?
From being followed all the time. Find out who's following me. Catch him. Make him stop. You're driving me crazy.
Look, lady, did you ever think of going to a doctor? Maybe you're just imagining things. Or that business with the pushing.
No, no!
Oh, no, no. Wait a minute.
He's waiting. Waiting and waiting for a chance to kill me!
In a moment, we'll return to the new adventures of Michael Shane and the pursuit of death.
What did you say to the BX clerk who sold you $25 worth of gifts?
Sack it to me. Sack it to me.
Ronald's going to furnish our house at the BX. He doesn't believe in being off base.
I'm a first baseman.
You a ball player?
No, I do all my buying first at the base exchange.
It had been a particularly dull day. Even the weather had been dull, with heavy clouds hanging over the city. New Orleans gets days like that. They make you sleepy. I quit the office at 5 and stopped on the corner to buy my paper from Charlie, the newsboy. And then this Joan Crawford type got in the way of a car and would have been hit if I hadn't hauled her back onto the sidewalk. She must have gone for my derring do because she hired me on the spot. Yeah, to protect her. She thought somebody was trying to kill her. I was in no position to argue with someone holding 20 a day under my nose, so I started to drive her home. I found out her name, Shirley Kernan, but she wasn't in a talking mood, so I just let her relax. She put her head against the back of the seat and closed her eyes. 15 minutes later, when I pulled up in front of the house, her eyes were still closed.
Please, don't move.
Don't you want to go in?
I'd like to just sit here for a minute. I haven't felt quiet and restful like this for a long time.
My day started at 5. I've got lots of time.
A foolish woman. Afraid of shadows.
Yeah, shadows and shadows in New Orleans.
You can't imagine what it's like. All the time, day and night, with the feeling someone is following me. Right behind my shoulder, all the time.
You, talked it over with your husband?
How did you... Oh, my ring. He's away on a business trip.
Well, if you want me to earn that 20 a day, you better give me something to go on.
That's what makes it hard, Mr. Shane. It's a feeling. I tried to fight it myself, but I can't. It's there, all the time, someone right behind me.
You said he's trying to kill you.
Once it was a car, a small convertible. At night, I stepped off the curb and this car started towards me. I jumped back just in time.
Recognize the car?
Johnny Terrence.
A friend?
A friend of my husband's. But he hates me. Johnny's always hated me.
You think he's the guy that...
If anybody I know is responsible, he must be the one.
Well, I can have a talk with him.
I don't know. I don't know. Right now, I feel secure, relaxed.
Because I'm here? It's a switch.
I can't fight this thing alone.
Shirley! Been wondering where you were.
Hello, Ralph. Michael Shane, Ralph Pierce.
How do you do?
Mr. Shane's a detective, Ralph. I...
Here's your cat.
The cat! The cat! The cat! Make it stop!
Shirley, take it easy.
The cat's just after the bird, Mrs. Kearney.
Dogging it! Creeping up
on it! There, the bird flew away. Yeah.
Does this happen often, Mrs. Kearney?
I can't stand it! Creeping!
Mr. Shane, would you wait here just a moment?
Yeah, sure.
Come, my dear, I want to talk to Mr. Shane. You wait for me in the house. Mr. Shane, you are a detective?
That's what the lady said.
I presume you are to investigate Shirley's hallucination.
Right again, Mr. Pierce.
I'd like to help you.
Yeah, you look like you're bubbling over with good intentions.
What I mean is, save you trouble.
Oh.
You see, Mrs. Kernan is subject to mental aberrations.
There must be an easier word.
This pursuit phobia, it's all mental, like a too vivid imagination. Like a hypochondriac who knows there's nothing wrong with him, but still feels aches and pains.
Nobody's following her.
Nobody.
Nobody's trying to kill her.
Absolutely not.
Well, you know, before that cat and bird affair, I had the same opinion. But it must be nice to be as positive as you are about something.
I know, Mr. Shane.
That's what I said. You see, I'm new here. I just started to work.
How do you fit in? I'm a friend of Shirley's.
And this Johnny Terrence, he's a friend of her husband.
That's right.
I just want to get it all straight in my mind. Now, what does his husband think of your being a friend of Shirley's?
Mr. Shane, I've been trying to help you.
Yeah, just the way I thought you would.
I could get to dislike you, Shane.
You work on it, Pierce. With a little effort, I'm sure you could get to hate me. Like I said, if it wasn't for that cat and bird business, I'd have probably washed it off quick, charged the 20 to experience, and gone home. But when I got finished talking to Pierce, it gave me ideas. Maybe somebody was trying to drive her crazy. Maybe Pierce. Maybe her husband. Maybe this Johnny Terrence had some answers. Wouldn't hurt to find out. Now, Mr. Terrence was home when I got there, getting ready to go out. The playboy type.
Got a heavy date, Mr. Shane. What can I do for you?
Information, Mr. Terrence.
About what?
Shirley Kearney.
Oh? I'm sorry. I'm much too much in a hurry.
I understand you're a friend of her husband's.
Stan and I were very good friends once. Were. She fixed that.
Well, she doesn't like you, either.
And that's a compliment. You'll pardon me now?
She's in a pretty bad way. I'm trying to help her.
Go right ahead.
Well, what can you tell me about Shirley?
Nothing.
Look, Johnny boy, I'm trying to be nice. It's tough, but I'm trying. You've been following her?
Is that what you wanted to ask me?
One of the things.
Really, Mr. Shane, I'm late now for an interview.
You'd be real sorry if something happened to her, wouldn't you, Terrence?
Oh, it would break my heart.
Oh, real sweet guy. Heart of gold.
Goodbye, Mr. Shane.
I should learn to control my temper. What is there about your kind of guy that riles me?
Do I have to use force to get you to leave?
You know, it'd be a pleasure.
All right, Shane.
That's a sucker punch. Leading with your right. Didn't they ever teach you that at prep school?
Get out! Get out!
Yeah, sure. You know, I feel better. Yes, sir, I feel much better. These lounge lizards are all cut from the same pattern. You want to hit them the minute you see the supercilious grin on their faces. I was happy this one gave me the opportunity. But I got the feeling there was another side to this guy. His hate on Shirley Kernan went deep and smoldered steady. There was too much parlor stuff. Pierce was oily and Terrence was full of hate. The air was loaded with unspoken things and bitter feelings. Shirley Kernan was right at the core of it, too. Maybe something I wasn't paying enough attention to was her husband. If I was a traveling salesman who wanted to drive my wife crazy, I'd sure do it while I was supposed to be on the road. Well, I kicked it around in my head as I drove toward town. I wasn't going very fast when I noticed a big black sedan come roaring up to pass me. I eased over to the right to give him plenty of room, but he wanted more. I eased over until I was practically scraping the paint off the guardrail and protecting the highway from a 30-foot drop. I thought this guy must be three sheets to the wind, and then he really came at me. My car suddenly started to rumble. I tried to fight the wheel and get a look at the guy in the sedan, but I couldn't do both. I couldn't even do one. The guardrail splintered like matchsticks, and the steering wheel jumped out of my hands. I felt the car go up on his nose, poised for a second like a graceful elephant. Sometimes I get a head full of sense. I duck. The rear end won the toss, and we started downhill, bouncing, rolling, and twisting. I hung on and just hoped. I kept bouncing around and hitting the side so often and so hard, I thought I was standing for a handball on a hot four-wall gate. I caught a flash of a big tree. And then everything stopped. Except that crazy front wheel spinning uselessly in the air. Spinning and spinning. Then the Sandman came. I got very tired and closed my eyes.
In a moment, we'll return to the new adventures of Michael Shane and the pursuit of death.
What do Americans believe? Here's Hollywood movie star, Phyllis Kirk.
I believe that in merely being alive, we have a tremendous responsibility, and that the responsibility is not only to our separate selves, but to one another. I believe it is in fear that we commit the crimes of intolerance and prejudice.
My first reaction to Shirley Kernan's hysterical fear about someone following her all the time and waiting to pounce on her was that she needed a doctor, not a private detective. But a couple of things happened that made me curious. First, there was this thing with the cat and the bird that almost made her go off the deep end. And then Ralph Pierce, her friend, tried to ease me out. And the parlor punk Johnny Terrence seemed to have some secrets, too. Finally, I got into an argument with a black sedan and lost the argument. My car went through the guardrail and over, and then I passed out. When I came to, the front wheel was in the air, still turning lazily like a ballerina ending a pirouette, so I knew I hadn't been out very long. Then a door was pulled open, and I saw a lot of sky, and Pierce's head right in the middle of it.
Why, Mr. Shane, what happened?
I was driving along and
Hello, Pierce. You just happened along, huh?
Oh, yes. I was driving along, saw this car down here. I had no idea it was yours.
Yeah, that's quite a coincidence.
Yes, here. Let me give you a hand.
Yeah, thanks.
Can you walk all right?
Yeah, I guess so. No broken bones. At least no important ones.
Do you have many enemies, Mr. Shane?
Yeah, whoever took me on this joyride wasn't a friend, Pierce.
I'll take you to town in my car. You can call for a tow car at the first gas station.
My insurance company's sure going to hate me.
You know, Mr. Shane, what I was telling you before about Mrs. Kernan, perhaps I was wrong.
You think so, huh?
I still don't believe Shirley's suffering from anything but delusions. But whoever did this to you, perhaps was meant as a warning.
To mind my own business?
Yes.
This sort of thing happens to be my business.
Certainly the money she's paying you can't compensate for bodily danger.
Maybe not, but... Is that your car, Mr. Pierce?
Yes.
Black sedan. Right fender scraped and dimpled. You know, the car that pushed me over is a dead ringer for yours.
As you said before, quite a coincidence, isn't it?
You seem to be quite a boy for coincidences. You see this bump on my jaw where it hit the dashboard?
Yeah.
Well, here comes another coincidence.
You'll regret this.
Now, later. I'm too busy now. If you want to ride back to town, the tow car will be coming back in a while. Why don't you wait, Mr. Pierce? Pierce's car purred like a contented tiger. I figured I'd stop at my office, clean up a bit, and get my .38 before I went any further on this case. I parked in front of my building and went up to the office. With my hand on the doorknob, I had a feeling. Not bad, but maybe just a little uneasy. I threw the door open and stepped aside. Nothing happened. Craned my neck and took a look. There was a man sitting in my client chair, the one with springs. At least I think it was a man. He had a turban on his head and flowing robes that covered his feet. His skin was dark and very white teeth smiled at me as he went into a short commercial.
Permit me to introduce myself, Mr. Shane. I am Remu, seer and mystic in the realm of the mind. I am a friend of Mrs. Kernan.
Not another one.
I am aware you are trying to help her.
Yeah. What can I do for you?
Perhaps I can aid you.
Perhaps. All I want to find out is whether her life is really in danger or if she just imagines her life's in danger.
Her life is in danger, but I do not believe it is from a physical source.
Nobody's trying to kill her?
No one but herself. We all contain within ourselves the seeds of our own destruction.
Yeah. No, I don't place you in this setup.
I want to help her, too.
You know John Terrence?
No, I only know that Mrs. Kernan dislikes him, and that he evidently dislikes her.
Yeah, with gusto. How about Pierce, Ralph Pierce?
A malignant person, Mr. Shane. An evil person.
Oh?
I do not know him well. I met him only once, but I felt the evil.
It was my second meeting with him before I felt anything. But what about Shirley's husband? Would he be trying to drive her out of her mind?
Mr. Shane.
Yeah?
These problems of the mind, they are susceptible of various interpretations. You understand, I am a friend of Mrs. Kernan.
Yeah, you said that.
I want only for her to have peace.
Go on.
There is one thing. Mrs. Kernan has always worn a necklace. Of one in particular she was fond. A heavy gold mesh necklace. For many weeks now she has ceased to wear it. I asked her about it, but she reacted strangely. I feel it is important.
Yeah? Well, what's the matter? Don't your feelings have the answer?
Oh, these problems of the mind.
And you think someone is trying to drive her out of her mind?
That explanation is much too simple, Mr. Shane. I fear when you find the answer, it will prove to be a great deal more sinister.
It was beginning to percolate. Like a gentle little thing, Ramu's words stirred softly. Seemed to say something beyond what I actually heard. It would fit, too. It would answer all the questions. Well, it was late, almost 11 o'clock, when I parked in front of Shirley Kernan's house and went up the front steps. I could hear voices behind the door. I rang the bell.
Shane.
Oh, what's the matter? Am I interrupting something?
No.
How about inviting me in, then?
Oh, yes. Come in.
Okay. Take it easy. Well, hello, Terrence. What happened? You two kiss and make up?
This is my cue to exit.
So long, Shirley.
Relax.
I'll see you some other time when the house isn't all cluttered.
Always on the wing. Stick around, Butterfly. I want words with you.
This time you don't catch me off balance, Shane.
Stop it,
see? You're still a sucker for that right lead. All right, what are you doing here?
What do you think he's doing here? You're trying to frighten me.
Well, Terrence?
I just wanted to find out if she'd heard from her husband. I haven't heard from Stan since he left. Usually writes.
That's all, Terrence?
Yes, you could have telephoned for
I
that.
I did. She refused to talk to me. Have you heard from your husband, Mrs. Kernan?
No.
Gone quite a long time, hasn't he? Doesn't he usually write?
Are you going to start on me now? I thought I could depend
on
you.
Pierce, Shirley, how about Pierce? Don't you depend on him?
Shut up!
I am cheat, Shirley. Don't you make Stan's life miserable? No wonder he likes to go on the road to get away from you. No wonder he doesn't write.
I hate you. I hate you. You're the one behind all this. You're the one creeping behind me all the time.
Mrs. Kernan, stop.
Ask him. Go on, ask him. It's him, the feeling. It's him, I tell you, evil, rotten.
You belong in a hospital.
You see?
Mrs. Kernan, you used to wear a gold mesh necklace. You don't wear it anymore. Why?
No.
May I see it, please?
No, you can't. What are you trying to do to me? You're all against me. You'd all like to see me dead.
Look, Mrs. Kernan, we... What is it?
You hear it?
I don't hear a thing. You're out of your...
Now. Behind me. Coming closer.
Well, whatever it is, it's not inside the room. It's not behind you. Come in.
Well. Hello, everybody.
What's the gun for, Pierce?
Just protection. Shirley, come with me.
Put it away, Pierce.
I haven't forgotten our last meeting, Shane. Not one bit. Come on, Shirley.
I won't go with you. I won't.
You'll do as I say, Shirley.
You're all against me. No one cares about
I
me.
I do, my dear.
It's here in this room, coming closer. It won't touch me. I won't let it.
Shirley, come back here, Shirley.
You won't find me. I'll hide and be with myself, all by myself. Stay.
Well, Pierce, you didn't make the grade in the big scene. As a stand-in for her husband, you're a flop.
Scene isn't over yet. Let's have my car keys, Shane.
I lost.
I'm in no mood to quibble about shooting you.
Say, please.
Shane.
That's great. Yeah.
Thanks. Now, if you two are wise men, you'll stay here. Everything's under control now. Let's keep it that way. Without bloodshed.
I don't get this. What goes on, Shane?
You got a car, Terrence?
Yes, outside.
You want to find out what it's all about?
Yes, but what's happened to Shirley?
It looks like we'll have the answer pretty quick. Come on, or we'll lose him.
Terrence drove. He was a pretty good driver for a guy who spent most of his time steering his way around nightclub tables. We went through the downtown section faster than the law allows, keeping Pierce's car in sight. Once or twice, we spotted Shirley's coupe a few blocks ahead of Pierce. Pierce didn't know it, but he was mighty helpful. We kept on in Indian file.
They're heading out of town.
We're doing 70 and not catching up. How are the tires on this jalopy, Terrence?
Front ones are fine.
In the back?
We'll find out.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe I had you wrong, Terrence. You got guts.
Thanks, Shane.
Come around the office sometime. Get a few lessons in the manly art.
It's a deal, if I can practice on you.
Like I said, maybe I got you wrong.
They're taking a fork to the left and slowing up.
All right, careful. We're getting too close.
Got one of the headlights.
All right, turn them off. We don't need them. Pierce's shot at us was sort of a feeble last effort, and the cause he must have known was lost. When we got around the bend, Pierce's car was just pulling off the road, a few feet behind Shirley's coupe. It was a grassy place near the river. Shirley was running, her hair flying in the wind. A bright moon had cut the clouds. It was almost like twilight, sort of eerie. Pierce started out after us. We parked. We started after them.
Shirley! Shirley, come back!
She reached a sandy place in the bank and fell to her knees. Pierce got to her and started to bend down to pick her up, but he stopped halfway and just watched, sort of fascinated. And then it hit me full force. I stopped dead.
What is it, Shane? What's she doing?
It's all over, Terrence. Nobody can help Shirley Kernan anymore.
In a moment, we'll be back with a thrilling climax to tonight's Michael Shane adventure.
47 years ago.
Each year, some 2 million visitors to Washington, D.C. read those words of the Gettysburg Address from the inscription on one wall of the Lincoln Memorial. On another wall is the second inaugural address. And in the center sits Daniel Chester French's majestic figure of the great emancipator. One of the most beautiful tributes to a great man, the Lincoln Memorial is another American landmark of liberty.
Ah!
stood there about 50 yards from the river, watched Shirley Kernan on her hands and knees at the bank of the river. It was all cold inside, sort of sick. Terrence had stopped when I did. He didn't get it.
Come on, Shane. What are you waiting for?
All right, Terrence. Shirley's hands were in the sand when we got there. She was digging furiously and mumbling to herself.
Oh,
Pierce was quiet. Watch.
And be clean again. And I'll be me again. Nobody will be able to touch me or hurt me. I'll be me. And all alone.
Shirley, don't, my dear.
I'll handle it, Pierce. All right, Mrs. Kernan. It's all right.
I must.
No, everything's all right. Nobody will hurt you.
Nobody will hurt me.
No. You're safe now.
Oh.
I don't get it, Shane. I sound like a broken record, but I don't get it.
The strain was too much. Pierce can tell you. Can't you, Pierce?
Yes. Yes, it's all over now. All over.
We left Shirley's car there. She drove back to town with Terrence and me. Pierce followed. Shirley was like a child now, looking up at me with those big eyes as if I were going to protect her. Only there wasn't even fear in her eyes anymore. Just a blank kind of look that I never want to see again.
She's really cracked up, hasn't she?
Yeah, like Humpty Dumpty. And all the king's men can't help.
But why? What caused it?
It's simple enough. The way she lost control when she saw a cat stalking a bird on a lawn. The delusion she had of being followed, the idea someone was trying to jump on her from behind. And her gold necklace.
I know all that, but I don't...
Well, you see, she was running away. Nobody was following her.
I don't have to run anymore. No,
what was she running away from?
Herself.
What?
Her conscience. Pierce knew it all the time, I guess, or suspected. He was trying to protect her, but he couldn't do it. No one could. Sometimes you get a case you don't like. But you're in business and you take what you get. Shirley's mind had played a trick. It had forced the knowledge of her guilt into her subconscious so that she was able to forget what she'd done. But her subconscious couldn't forget. The two forces fighting each other finally snapped her mind. I guess there's always some kind of retribution, one way or another. In her case, the toughest kind. Next morning, when the police got to the spot at the bank of the Mississippi with shovels, they found what I knew they would. The proof of Shirley's guilt. The grave of Shirley's husband, Stanley Kernan. He'd been choked to death, from behind, with a gold mesh necklace.
Our story is based on characters created by Brett Halliday. The music is composed and conducted by John Duffy, and Michael Shane is portrayed by Jeff Champ.
This series has been selected from the archives of the best in radio of years gone by.
There's more from the 21st Precinct, Michael Shane, Case Closed, and all of the other Relic Radio podcasts at relicradio.com. There's our Shoutcast stream there as well with even more old-time radio, lots to listen to there, all for free thanks to your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of the links on the website. Your support makes all of this happen. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.